Okay. So I will skip this initial parts about Ussmann-Einheit theorem and so on and so forth. And I will try to discuss a bit more about MHD model of the pulsar wind. So the real problem is that there are a lot of models for pulsar wind magnetosphere, but actually we can't observe it. So there's a real big issue for astronomers. How are we going to test our model? And if we have a wind coming from the pulsar, so the only way we have actually to test our model is to look how this wind interacts with the environment. And to see that it's constraining the structure of the pulsar magnetosphere by using pulsar wind network. The problem is that the structure of the pulsar magnetosphere is defined on the size about that of the light cylinder, which is 10 to the 8 centimeters in the face of the crowd, while nebulae are of order of 1 parsec. That's the radius of determination shown in the crowd. And the existing model up to 2 years ago, 3 years ago, of pulsar wind nebulae were the standard 1D Kenman chronicity model. And those models, to work, to reproduce the observer feature, requires that the wind at the termination shock should be dominated by particle energy flux. So this sigma is the ratio of the pointing energy flux to the particle energy flux. And that's high Lorentz factor wind. Unfortunately, if you look at the magnetosphere of a neutron star, you assume that there is a magnetic acceleration. So you expect that the light cylinder, most of the energy of the wind to be carried by pointing flux. So somehow, between the light cylinder and the termination shock, you have to convert magnetic energy into particle energy. And people have tried to do it in many ways. The same way is to use the model for your wind. And the first, I think, reasonable model was the 1D monopole by Michael. And you can define the wind in terms of this sigma for a meter, where this phi is forward on magnetic flux. And the result, if you integrate the equation, is that you get a very low, if you have sigma of order 10 to the 3 or 10 to the 4, you still get a very small gamma. And still, all your energy is carried by the most of your energy is carried by the magnetosphere. So the strict monopole doesn't work. And what people have tried to do is to relax the strict monopole assumption. And we know from solar physics that if you have a coronal hole where magnetic flux there is a huge divergence of the fluid flux, you can have a lot of acceleration. And there have been various different ideas proposed. Either you have a very strong transition divergence in a more confined region after the light cylinder. But it's very hard to explain why such the field line should pass through a nozzle and what keeps this nozzle stable. And the right idea is that you might have seen somehow, somewhere in your magnetosphere, the flux diverges more than radially. And still, you need this radius delta to be at least 0.4 in order to get the sigma that you for the kinetic quantity required at the termination. The result of this is that if you want somehow to accelerate a wind or convert energy using ideal MHD, you have to diverge more than radial somewhere. And that means that somewhere else you have to have collimation. So the two problems are essentially related in the case of the physics. And it's very easy to see why this doesn't work if you think in terms of collimation, because as Mitch was saying, electric force balances almost exactly magnetic force once you have relativistic wind. So you don't have that much collimation. And your field line remain almost straight. So if you want to do things, you have to at least do that 2D axis in math. And that means solve the Grashof-Ramstrand transverse equilibrium. And I don't think there is any exact solution, even a simple monopole-like case for this problem. There have been solutions in some specialized condition, either asymptotic condition, transverse regime, self-similar model, or even perturbation to the force-free solution. And except some special case where you some people claim they can't find the correct exact Kendall and Koronecki values. In general, you find that the asymptotic Lorentz factor doesn't exceed the sigma to the 1/3. And the sigma infinity, which is the sigma Kendall and Koronecki, this is the sigma Michael, is more or less much bigger than 1. And the idea is that you don't have any collimation for relativistic wind except in a very narrow region close to the very axis. And in general, the conversion of magnetic to kinetic energy is logarithmic after the first point. The problem with all these assumptions, all these treatments, is that they need some ad hoc assumptions somewhere. So they are not completely spoofed for self-consistent. If you want to have a certain consistent model, what you have to do is you have to solve the relativistic MHD equation, conservation of energy and momentum conservation, plus an induction equation and an equation of state to close your system. And we now have schemes that can do that. So there are a set of hyperbolic conservation loops. You can discretize them on a grid and try to solve them. And do pulls away in what has been done in the case of the sun or in the case of disk in classical energy. Unfortunately, there are limitations to how close to a pulsar case you can go. And those are more or less numerical limitations. In general, it's very hard to get Lorentz partial much higher than 100. Their code tends to crash if you go higher. And the same for the magnetization. You can hardly exceed V squared over a total gas entropy, about 100. Because the equation becomes incredibly stiff and the pressure is not well defined anymore from a numerical point of view. And what happens is that your code ends up finding a non-physical solution and then it stops working. So the first simulation of a pulsar wind in MHD was done by Sergei Vogovalov in 2001, assuming the cold wind. So you have some injection radius here. One here is the light cylinder, and here's the position of the fast point. And in his model, even if it's a cold wind, you have to assume some injection condition, and it assumes the Lorentz factor of the injection at two cases, with gamma equal 2 and gamma equal 7. And what you can see is that in the gamma equal 2, you do see collimation. Look at the shape of the fast surface. In gamma equal 7, you get a fairly radial and collimated model. And in general, you get very close to monopolar shape for your field line for gamma equal 10. And you can look at your structure. What you find is that very close to the axis, you form indeed a collimated core, but the radius of this core is much smaller than the radius of the path for high Lorentz factors. And the total mass flux in the core is a very minor amount of the total mass flux in the wind. That means that you cannot make out a jet out of that core, as you see, for example, in the Crab Nebula. You don't have enough mass there. And things get worse if you actually take a hot wind from the surface. And this is the full velocity. So in the case gamma equal 2, you get some kind of acceleration in the unit of the radius of the fast point. But for gamma equal 7, you get a very minor one. So the energy conversion is highly inefficient for relativistic wind. And based on this model, you can build a 2D model for the wind that has been used to do to build 2D model for pulsar wind nebula. We are then going to discuss it. So what I have done is to try to do these problems for in the case of a hot stellar wind. So it doesn't really apply to the case of pulsar, but we were focused more on your magnetar model on the first few seconds, where you have an atmosphere which is neutrino heated. And what caused the blowing of your wind at the very surface of the star is neutrino heated. So you have a very fast rotating object with a sound speed at the surface, which is one-tenth of the sound of the light, speed of light, higher density, and strong magnetic field. And in this case, you have to have gravity, and you have to have it self consistently, because you want to treat a case where most of the energy is created by magnetic fields. So you want to have it coupled with gravity itself, so it at least using larger potential. And the question we would like to answer is, can a magnetar trigger a gamma ray burst? So what's more or less the values of m dot for you to have a magnetar to produce a high Lorentz factor wind if the mass flux does depend on the values of the magnetic field, and how the total energy angular momentum losses scale with V square over rho? So how much it takes to go to an almost force-free solution. So this is the result of a 1D model. This is the radial velocity, and this is the upend speed that drops out. This is the values of magnetic field at the surface. For the values of m dot is actually a solution of the problem. So you write the values of V, and then you rescale everything. And this is the Lorentz factor that we get. In the best case, we get A, very far from the Lorentz factor. And that goes, and this is the ratio of the, sorry, energy density of matter over energy density of the magnetic field. And it doesn't exceed, in our computational box, like 5%. So there is a very minor conversion of energy going on. If you move to 2D, you can do the same problem. Here you have the structure of the magnetic field line, and color represents the azimuthal component of V phi. And V phi is still exactly like sine theta. And the field is almost radial. This is for m dot 10 to the minus 5 for the mass of the cell. And if you look at the Lorentz factor scale also like sine theta, it tends to be a bit higher at intermediate latitude. And in this case, this box is 8, but we arrive, the box is much bigger, we arrive about 10, the maximum Lorentz factor, which is still very small. So this is V5, the angular velocity. It grows almost for rotation after the light cylinder, then it fades down like 1 over r. And as you see, there is a big component of V theta. That means that you have indeed collimation. And you can see this also on the mass flux distribution. But you see there is a big enhancement on the axis. That is due exactly to the collimation itself. So you form indeed a small collimated core. The size is of order of the size of the alphenic radius, so it's very small compared to the overall system. And the mass flux here is just a minor fraction. So the integrated mass flux, it doesn't matter that much. So the mass flux is higher at the equator, it's scaled like this way, except for a very tiny region, even if we have some heat on the boundary conditions here. And V theta increased over the pole. So you can get some scaling law for the wind. You can also look at integrated quantities like the total energy and angular momentum. And here you see how the scale, the ratio of the energy and matter over the energy of the magnetic field, and you then get much higher than 10%. So what we found is that the conversion is still more efficient than the logarithmic in our simulation, box at least. And at the end of our simulation, it scales more or less like r to the 1/3, r is the radial distance, but it seems that it tends to saturate. So even if you move to 2D monopole, even if you assume a cold wind, so you may, a hot wind, so you may imagine something that's going on close to the center object that provides a bit of acceleration and collimation, you really don't get as much. And we have tried also a mass-loaded cave with m dot is about 10 to the minus 2 solar mass per second. An interesting result in this case is that the magnetic field is looks more or less like in this cave. But if you look at the Lorentz factor, it tends to peak at a higher latitude, about 70 degrees. So you get higher Lorentz factor actually not on the equator, but somehow at a different angle. And the efficiency is much higher. So we have also checked how close we are to the force-free solution. And this is the plot of the total angular momentum losses, the 1D case and the 2D case. In the 1D case, you can fit all these points very well with this relation. So if you assume that this should converge to the force-free case, when m dot goes to 0, you can identify this d as the j force-free case, j dot force-free, and you find that a high magnetized case holds this relation. That's a way to estimate. And I don't think there is any force-free model in GR for the even for the 1D monopole, but we have used it fits very well with the result you would expect if you correct, for example, the Michael model. And in 2D, you don't have a very good fit, but you can still see the saturation. And you get the saturation about 1/2 of the values of the 1. And if you ask what's the values of sigma for this point, this is about a bit less than 200. So I would say that for sigma 200, we are almost converged to the force-free solution. And that means that you do not need really to do sigma 1000 if you want to build a pulsar. You can stick with somehow smaller values and see you get most of the physics that's happening. And if you do not accelerate for sigma 100, you will not accelerate, of course, either for sigma. So the next step will be to do the dipole. The dipole is a more realistic configuration for a pulsar. And you have magnetic field that diverges more than radially, so you may imagine that somehow you get a stronger acceleration. But unfortunately, the dipole is a very messy system. Because essentially there are current sheet and closed zone in your model that is very hard to handle together. So you have a closed zone. That means that you can't read the closed zone with a Grad-Shafranov approach. There is no actual flow in that zone. If you use a cold wind model, you have to fix some injection condition at the base of the zone. You can't assume that it be exactly cold, otherwise, inside the closed zone, you will not have any kinds of equilibrium. You will require density to go to zero there, and again, you will find that cold will not work. Plus, you have problem on extrapolation, your values at the very surface, because you have magnetic field line that enters the surface with a certain angle. And so you have to do a good reconstruction inside, otherwise you can trigger oscillation at the very surface. From a computational point of view, you get problems on the open-closed zone boundary. You have lots of shear going on between matter inside, which is almost stationary, to outside, which is flowing with a speed, which is a fraction of the speed of light. And you have point resolution to the Hawaii point, and you end up having reconnection on the current sheet on the equator. So this is the case, a high mass-loaded case. You see there is a bit of closed zone here. The magnetic structure out in the far region is very close to what you get in a monopole. It doesn't change that much, even for this case. You get, this is the Lorentz factor, it's higher at about 70 degrees, and as you can see, there is a slow wind region on the equator that we'll expect for the case of solar wind, for example, you know that the presence of a closed zone creates a slow equatorial wind. When you actually move to a higher magnetization, you get a somehow bigger closed zone, but not that much. What you get is a lot of reconnection on the terrain. And you form magnetic islands. And these magnetic islands actually carry most of the angular momentum. There are flux rope too. And they carry a lot of angular momentum and a lot of energy. So most of the angular momentum at the end of the system is carried by these flux ropes. And you have a noisy structure of the angular momentum flux with oscillation of about 30%. Now, it is not clear to me how much this depends on the resistivity of numerical resistivity that is in the code, which is implicit on finite differencing, and how much could it be real instability. But this current sheet isn't stable for tearing mode. So, and it can, and there is a tearing mode here because there is shear of the flow, so it gets amplified. So I will skip this, which is about non-ideal MHT. So if you have, for example, tearing mode creating this plasma magnetic islands, or either if you have a striped wind region, you can think of dissipation going on. So that's, if you want, the presence of the steering mode can provide you a way of creating a known and a magnetized equatorial region even without a striped wind. And they tend to grow bigger. So I will focus on the end on this about revising the sigma flow. There is lots of models, but some models actually find out that you can get the exact canon and coronic invaders. Now, unfortunately, it doesn't seem that the exact canon and coronic invaders is that much good once you do 2D simulation. So this is Vila and Krab, and this is the result of a 2D MHD simulation. And you see you can reproduce quite well the presence of rings and torus, and the knot was observed on the Krab. And the result of this simulation is that you need sigma to be at least higher than 10 to the minus 2. Otherwise, you don't form a jet for collimation of a post-flow structure. And if you want to reproduce X-ray emission, you need even a higher gamma. So now we are in a situation where we can use actual nebular properties and fissure in the nebula to constrain the very detailed structure of the wind, at least at the close to the termination shot. So these are two results for two different values of this parameter P, which define the size of the natural region along the equator. B1 is about 45 degrees, B10 is about 10 degrees. And you see that gives rise to very different kinds of nebula. In this case, you find one big ring, here you have a two ring structure. And we know that there are these differences between some object fits very well if you assume just one huge torus. Other object fits better if you assume a two ring structure. And another thing that I would like to notice is that if you look at the jet, you end up finding a hollow jet. While in the Krab, the jet is not hollow at all. So that suggests that somehow, somewhere, you must mix your magnetic field. It's not complete, it cannot be completely toroidal if you want to reproduce structure like B1509 on the Krab. And that poses a problem where this happens. Is some instability going on at the center, or is global kinking instability that takes place in the entire network? And now we have 2D simulation, you can't address this problem. And that's the integrated spectrum. The other problem is that if you want to reproduce the X-ray data, you assume optical and X-ray belong to the same power distribution as acceleration at the shot, you really need a higher sigma, so or a very small region close to the equator, or a sigma of order at least 0.1. So that means that you're really, 2D simulations show that you can have a wind where you have region of high sigma and region of low sigma, and they can coexist, and somehow the nebula find a way to allow the flow structure not to explode or allow for a steady state solution that you don't have in a canon and coronic light situation.
In the Krab nebula, the magnetic axis is not coinciding with the rotational axis, but picture seems to be axisymmetrical. Could you indicate where is direction of magnetic axis and rotational axis in this observational picture?
In this picture. So what it's thought to be is that the jet actually should be coincident with the rotational axis of the nebula. And what really the inclination of the magnetic to the rotation axis gives is eventually the size of this folded current sheet, how big is extending lock. But the average structure of the wind, the average direction of the toroidal wind is given by the axis, the rotation axis. That's the idea. So we think that it should be about 30 degrees infinity, but there are measures that goes from 19 degrees to zero. I mean, it's not that easy to figure out what's the direction of the magnetic axis. You need a model for the emission to constrain that angle. So, and the assumption is that the nebula traces the structure of the magnet, or actually the rotation axis.
Yeah, I have a question, actually. This is directed at both Niccolo and Anatoly. To what degree has there been comparison of the force-free results with the high sigma, sorry, low sigma MHD results since with the MHD, you think you might have some better idea about how to put dissipation into the code, whereas with the force-free calculations, you really have no idea what to do, and you need the dissipation whenever you have an integration that has a current sheet in it.
Unfortunately, all of these developments have been done in the past month, as far as I understand. So we haven't really had chance to compare, but it seems like the MHD codes are intrinsically diffusive, and they're probably more diffusive than my force-free code. So what will look like a nice current sheet, that perhaps why it pulses, that's why you have these tearing modes, and it's not controlled. You can't lower down your resistivity in the code because it will explode. Cool. So the way the current sheets work in the force-free code is they're not resolved. That's why they're hidden within one cell, so I don't require any extra physics like pressure to be resolved on the grid. So they're just constrained within the cell. It has its own problems, of course, but that way you can kind of have a current sheet that will not reconnect. It will just sit on your grid.
So in the MHD case, what people do usually when they study current sheet is that you have to resolve your current sheet, and you need to use an explicit resistivity that is bigger than the numeric resistivity on the scale of the current. Now, if you want to do a global simulation with the current sheet over a full semisphere, and you want to use a pure plasma resistivity, you have such different scales that it's kind of crazy to do that. But it's not obvious how much it's important in the numeric terms.
Actually, just a follow-up, are there any test problems that you've done where you've compared the force-free calculation to the results?
For the model.
Yeah.
You want to build a problem with no current shift. Yeah. With a current
shift. I just wanted to ask you left us with some desperation about getting high gammas with the numerical solutions, and I was just wondering what is the cause of the problem, because there are analytic solutions or semi-analytic solutions that get very high gammas.
So what I think is that usually analytic solutions are in some specialized regime where it's really hard to control the approximation value. So there are, for example, some similar solutions that find the, so I think the self-similar solution really apply only close to the axis. That's ideal. And they are often transfast only, or in some cases transulfenic, but I think there is a work by Koenig with the transulfenic solution But you see that the transoptanic actually apply only close to the axis, while the transfast can be applied also close to the equator. It's not clear how strong the self-similarity condition is. It's something that you have to impose on your system. And a small deviation from that condition, how important it is. Does it close up everything?
Work of Lahakis, and I was also on that paper. But obviously there are issues with self-similarity, but what you're referring to in terms of axis, you have to choose whether you do current Kerring regime or return Kerring regime, and the nice thing about the current Kerring regime that the current doesn't blow up near the axis, and that's also the regime that you choose for. But we showed you could do hybrid solutions where you join them at large distance. But these are details. But these are details, obviously. And obviously, we choose some injection conditions. We choose the solutions that give those high gammas typically are the ones in which the poloidal current scales with the flux function is very close, goes as A to the power very close to zero, a little bigger than zero, but it's almost constant with A, the poloidal current. So these are kind of details which are obviously necessary from the fact that you're doing it analytically, but otherwise those solutions are exact, both transalphenic and superalphenic, and the main point is that they demonstrate acceleration of a very large scale. So it's important, of course, how you set.
I know it's not the so I think that it will be good to, for example, try one of how stable are those solutions. For example, take one of the steady state solutions as an initial condition for a model, and look if
I think it's a wonderful idea. It's an excellent idea because the people have done it now with the non-relativistic solutions, the Blandford and Plane type, and they found out that when you start with use that as initial conditions, you actually can get very high exertion, which you wouldn't otherwise get. But so I think it's possible.
I also wanted to ask about gamma. You talked at the start about there being evidence for gammas of 10 to the 6, but then you...
evidence means that the canon coronical model, if you want to reproduce the spectrum, requires 10 to the
6. Yeah, but then you're also showing these that require quite high sigma greater than 0.01, and I don't see any way of doing that if gamma really is as high as 10 to the 6.
So the point with MHD model is that actually you need gamma higher than 10.
Right.
Because the properties of the fluid structure inside the nebula, once you have a relativistic wind, they don't matter that much if gamma is 10 to the 6 or 10. So it's you have to look at the X-ray emission and optical emission. And there is this big problems of being too many radio-emitting electrons, and we don't know. We are observing the crop since how much? 100 years. So there's really no idea if this is kind of an effect of the evolutionary history of the nebula. So if you want to reproduce the radio emission, you require a flux of electron which is 10 to the 40 particles per second. And the canon coronity model, if you apply to X-ray and optical, tells you that you reproduce the optical and radio data with 10 to the 38 particles per second. So. Yes, if more or less they belong to the same acceleration group. That's necessary.
Can I think of anybody? I should say something. Yeah. Everything we're talking about is plus divergence of the flow back to the flow. Why the equatorial flow? Basically, nothing is known about what's happening in the Roger Niagara book. What evidence is there for a shock anchor outside the equator? There's not an unreasonable attitude you can take that the pulsar polar cap knows how to make a really clever model for the present time. And mostly goes with the polar wind, and that's the horizontal flow. The question is, how can I get gamma to the kind of solution to the higher than the lower? I'm going to have a problem with that. It's just all I can do. But the system is clearly asymmetric in both layers. And until we get our grips on both oxidational and in terms of convection and modeling the vapor, what's happening is that cold is so visible. And at early times, we draw really strong conclusions about very concentration. Or,
there is one mysterious thing in the Crab Nebula. If to make look on the central ring, smaller one, we see that the ring, this ring is in the Crab Nebula.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We can see that the ring is pretty uniform in brightness. So, and the question is why we do not observe there a Doppler effect, because in all the calculation we see clearly a Doppler effect. So brightness varies rather remarkably. And on one of your transparencies, you also obtain a quite uniform rings, one of the last one. Yeah, here. On the left one. They look quite uniform. How do you explain this?
So, that's depend on the Doppler boosting of the region that emits those rings. So you have a very structured termination shock. You have a fast flow at higher latitude, a slower flow on the equator, and a black flow coming back. So what actually rules is that this more or less comes from the rim shock, which is called the rim shock region, the fast flow on the upper side. And that depends on the velocity of that flow and the inclination of the shock and the magnetization. So higher magnetization, you just like one huge ring, very faint one, then you have the ring. So it's kind of, we are in a situation where you can build different model changing parameters and you can compare with observation. So you say, for example, that Crab is a nice ring that's not fainter to Hind, but Vega, for example, is an inner ring, the Hind you can see. So does this difference trace some intrinsic difference in the wind? There is a zoom big enough of PWN that show Torrey now that you can start looking at all pools of wind look the same, or maybe they are very different one from the other. So that's possible.